Hey, and welcome to a special episode of my weekly show. I'm Father Roderick. And the sounds you hear are the sounds of Castlefest, which is a big fantasy fair that stretches out over 4 days in one of the most famous tourist places of the Netherlands, the Keukenhof, which is the number one tourist attraction in the northern part of Holland for the tulips. So in the month of April, this place is crowded with hundreds of thousands of tourists from all over the world. But then when the tulip season is over, there are festivals like this that re-inject, I think, interest in the area. And these are the premises of a castle, which is located very close to the tulip fields. An old castle with a beautiful castle ground surrounded by trees, patches of grass, other nice houses, and this is a great location for a fantasy fair like Castlefest. This group is partially walking on stilts, and they're now handing out some candy to, or what I thought it was candy to some kids, but it's actually nuts, walnuts. And it's a lady in dressed in what looks like prehistoric vestments, if you can speak of vestments, and she's carrying a long staff with feathers on it. And then there's a musical group and another lady that also dancing in front of the group. Then you'll find music all over the park. That's one of the reasons that I enjoy this particular fantasy festival so much, because it is completely drenched in music. And it's a very relaxed atmosphere. I think I shared with you previous visits to fairs like the Midwinter Fair and Elfia. Well, this is by far the biggest one in surface. And since I wanted to go here, this is kind of the last activity that I do before I go on the camp, the youth camp with the Archdiocese next week. And then afterwards I'll have a short vacation in Spain. And this fantasy fair happened to be just a few days before that, so I freed up my calendar and I enjoy my time here. And it's a visual spectacle, of course. You listen to the sounds, which you may already enjoy, but I'll do my best to describe the impressive surroundings and the beautiful costumes, like these ladies here on my left. One is oops. There's another guy on stilts. This is another group. And these guys are all dressed in skeleton clothing and black, and like their faces are painted in silver. And there are a number of figures on stilts. They're very impressive. They've got these dark dreadlocks and big dark wings. And then there are two other ladies with top hats and dresses, and they seem to float almost over the path. And they're guiding some of the participants here of the festival to the sides of the road so that the bigger carriage in the middle of that group can pass by. But these ladies seem to float almost, and in fact, it's a very nifty technical idea that they implemented. They're riding on segways or something similar. And so they can just move around and circle around and move very fast and fluidly. And they're now, this is a small ceremony that they also did yesterday. There's another person, looks kind of like a dark angel, carrying around a small carriage or whatever it is, with with some horns in it and dust, or basically mud. And so they're making a circle of sand and mud, probably to symbolize death. And so you got all these kind of neo-pagan rituals, and there's a lot of these places where, you know, you've got the fortune tellers and the witches and the labyrinths. So there's a lot of that. And it's, for me, this is, some people are wondering, well, why as a priest are you wandering around on what is basically what looks like a very pagan kind of event? But I always look at this from the side of what unites us as people, and we are all incurably religious. And even though perhaps people don't find the way to the regular churches anymore, even though here on my left, I think that's Jesus walking around, or a guy that looks exactly like Jesus. But a lot of people don't perhaps express their religious sentiments in the traditional religions of their parents or grandparents. And yet, that desire, that longing for something that goes beyond just your day-to-day life, your work, your house, your duties, money, your car, that sense of, you know, we need more than that. I think that's what you encounter here, why there's such an explosion, I think, of these festivals, where it's much more, you know, much less structured in a certain way, although all these different groups, these subgroups here on a festival like this, have their own kind of social community, which has its own rules, including, you know, what you wear and what you don't wear and how you behave or not. But it's a very open place where people can explore, I think, this sense of, I don't know, this desire for transcendence in their lives. And of course, a lot of the people are just here because of the costumes, because they like to dress up, because this place makes them feel, for a few days, that there is more to life than just the routine, your day-to-day routines. And so these two ladies that I talked about, and one was in a beautiful green dress. She clearly made herself. Some of these people work for months on the costumes that they just put on display today. And the other lady was wearing this powdered wig and was walking around this beautiful kind of Renaissance blue gown, as if she came straight from a Louis XIV's palace. And it's super colorful. So for someone like me who loves the visual aspects, loves colors, loves design, creativity, this is a fantastic place. I'm walking around today as a priest. Yesterday, I came here with a friend, a fellow parishioner in Amersfoort, and I was wearing a blue science t-shirt from Star Trek, the original series, of course. And today I figured, you know what, I'm just gonna put on my clerical dress, and because I know that there are quite a few people today that I know, or that know me or follow me on Facebook or on Instagram or on Twitter, and so they were asking me, how do we recognize you? So I figured I'll just put on my Roman collar, which results sometimes in very hilarious encounters. Like just a few minutes before I started recording, I bump into this couple, a young couple, and the man is wearing this t-shirt with Pope Francis on it, you know, thumbs up, and it says Papa Francesco. And so, like, it took me like 5 seconds, they were passing me by, to realize that that was actually Pope Francis that he had on his shirt. So I turn around and I was like, I see a Pope Francis t-shirt, and I would like to take a selfie with you. And then he's like, sure. And then he's like, oh, wait a minute, you're a priest. And there are lots of these encounters like that. I bumped into someone else, a girl who was wearing this amazing gown. She kind of looked something from Alice in Wonderland. And she also created it herself. And she's like all surprised, like, oh, it's good to see you again. Remember, we met at Winter Fair. And I was like, I cannot remember I can't remember her. I don't know her name. So I asked her, so what were you wearing back then? And she was describing her costume. Still didn't ring a bell. But then she told me, yeah, you've been talking with a friend of mine. She was also there, and you actually talked for a long time with her, and I was sitting there as well. So clearly, I was probably totally forgot that she was there too. She was listening in on the conversation. I don't even know what it was about, but I do remember the occasion. I think it was a very cold midwinter fair back then, and there was this... This is in Archeon, which is a kind of like a history park where they've recreated houses and settlements from various time periods in the Netherlands. And there's this medieval street with medieval houses, and one of those houses actually has paintings of Saint Martin, if I'm not mistaken, and the legend of Saint Christopher. And there's this nice, beautiful wood fire in the middle of the building. And we were sitting there, and you could get a cup of what's it called? The hot wine with the fruits in it, etc. The glue wine. And I think that's where we had that conversation. And I think the other girl was like dressed up like one of those characters from Game of Thrones. Something like that. But it's so fun that in the middle of it, and I'm absolutely certain if I hadn't walked around here as a priest, she wouldn't have recognized me, or that wouldn't have rung a bell. And so I met another parishioner, someone else who lives in the Netherlands, and always goes to places like this. And so we always take a selfie, we always talk. And that's what I love most. And yesterday, when I was here wearing my Star Trek attire, I didn't have any encounters. So this is another friend who always walks around with his bagpipe. This is a real Scottish bagpipe that he purchased himself and got some lessons and everything. I interviewed him, I think also at the Winter Fair. And he's walking in the direction of the castle, and I'm now in an area where you get a beautiful view of the entire castle in the distance. Looks a bit like, yeah, it's a very new castle, relatively new for at least for Dutch history, probably built in the 19th century, or even later. It's kind of hard to tell, but it is. It's got these nice, it's got red brownish brick walls, and it's got a few semi towers. But I love the rooftops. They're very much like the stuff you see in Versailles. It's kind of this gray color. It's nice. It's nice. It's not a spectacular castle. It's not like Elphia, which is at Harz Islands, which is a massive castle. Really one that you could totally picture in fairy tales. This is a much more modest castle. But nevertheless, it is a castle. And I have to say that the entire kind of layout of the park and the way they, like for here, for instance, they've created these wooden signposts. And it's all in calligraphy, and it says where you can go, and it just helps create this cool atmosphere of you're in a different world. They also placed lanterns all over the park with LED lights in them. Now these have just been placed there for the occasion to make it feel more like like a fairy tale place, and it all helps a lot. I'm thinking of going in the direction of the tents, or these bigger tents for events, and that's funny. You hardly see that. It's a guy dressed up as a medieval pilgrim, or probably someone who went on one of the Crusades, a crusader. But he also has his kid with him, so he's pushing around the carriage with the baby, and at the same time he's dressed as a crusader. I love that combination. I doubt that would be something you'd see during a real crusade. And it's kind of the eclectic nature of a festival like this that I really enjoy. It's a very hot day. That's the only downside of this weekend. We're still in the middle of this heat spell. It's been going on for months. It feels like months, definitely weeks. And so temperature in the Netherlands is around 30 degrees Celsius. That's in the 90s, I think, in Fahrenheit. It's pretty hot. The only redeeming aspect of the weather here is that we're close to the sea. And so there's a bit of wind, and the wind is actually much cooler than the rest of the air. So that's nice. But when you're in these crowds, and this is the busiest day of the entire festival. It's a Saturday, so everyone is free. When you're in the middle of the crowds, then you don't feel the wind. These tents are of the Celtic world, and there's a Scottish flag and an Irish flag. Why not? And over there in the distance, I think, is a tent for the... Or actually, there are two tents. Here is a circus tent with blue and yellow stripes, and that's the tent for the board games. So let's take a look. I'm a novice in the world of board games, but I'm learning rapidly, and Sebastian, a parishioner of mine, is introducing me to all the cool board games. So I'm getting more and more accustomed. But I don't know which games are fun and which ones are kind of meh. So here in this tent, I'm now stepping in this inside, you can actually try out these games. And there's some people that will introduce you to the games. And here are two guys in Star Trek costumes. Actually quite cool. There is a Data, who looks actually pretty good. Pretty much like Data himself. And there's another character. Both are wearing the yellow suits from The Next Generation. And they're looking at Funko. But that guy, really, his face looks just like the actor who plays Data. Funny. So this is, I know this one. This is Ticket to Ride, New York. Great game that I've only played digitally. Here we have Potion Explosion. That looks funny, with all sorts of marbles. This game, I don't know what this is. It looks pretty cool. Majesty. It's a card game. This looks very complicated. It's Bunny Kingdom. And it's a big board, and you have to place all sorts of differently colored bunnies. So it's probably like a strategy game. And you could just try it out with friends, read the manual, or ask help from some of the people that run the store, basically. And I'm always kind of scouting around. This is Stuffed Fables. Stuffed Fables with nice miniatures. That's another big thing of board games. The miniatures themselves, they look nice, but they're all just gray plastic. And the thing is that the real fans, they actually sit down and paint all those miniatures and spend hours just doing that. This is actually one of those games that I really, really like, where it's the entire group against one game leader. So the game leader is sitting at the top of the table, there's an entire team that has to react to the instances that the game leader creates. And this is actually a very kind of hands-on game. I can see that it's a Dungeons and Dragons type of game. So he's got an entire manual in front of him that the others can't see, so he can choose which disasters and monsters he can unleash on the on the group of heroes, and they'll have to counter those dragons, I suppose. This one also looks really nice. The board itself, very colorful. It is a bit dusty all over the place, because you've got these dust roads, lots of sand, and of course with many people, you get a lot of dust in the air, so sometimes that's a sneeze party for me. Unstable Unicorns, that's what they're playing over there. Looks fun. This is a board game, no idea what it is. The Kingdom Dominion. Is it good? Yeah? You like it?
It's a deck building classic.
A deck building classic. So you build your deck, and then there's a two-person...
It's really easy to explain. You start with some points and with some gold. And with those gold, you buy cards.
Uh-huh.
And with those cards, you put them in your deck, and then you draw new cards. And then you can play your cards to buy more cards.
I see.
And you try to win by by two means.
Yes.
First of all, you can buy all the provinces, then the game ends.
Yes.
Or if three of the action cards are sold out, then the game also ends. And then at the end of the game, the person with the most points wins.
Excellent.
But there are many different types of cards. For example, this one is currency, as in you can buy cards with it.
Yeah.
But it's also worth victory points.
Ah,
so that means it has a double function.
Yeah. So when you attack, right. Yeah.
And that's why it's more expensive. Uh-huh. Than, for example, a normal silver, because they are worth the same.
Yes, but they have two functions.
Is,
so you're more versatile in what how you're going to play the game. That's great.
Dominion is a really, really great game. If I'm not mistaken, there are right now between like 6 or 8 expansions of it already.
Oh, wow.
Out there. And sometimes it's also played in tournaments,
uh-huh.
but that's not really my kind of style.
Yeah.
But, you know, casual game, like a half an hour or 45 minutes or something.
I like games like that, because you can play several on one evening, for instance.
Exactly.
What is your all-time favorite board game?
My all-time favorite board game is Ticket to Ride.
Really?
For two reasons.
Yeah?
First of all, it's so easy to explain to other people, to new people.
True.
It's the perfect introductory game.
True.
And second of all, it offers so much diversity in one single box.
It never gets boring.
It never gets boring.
Excellent. Well, enjoy your meal.
Thanks
for the explanation.
Yeah, no problem.
Excellent. Have a great time. Say again?
Do you have a card?
Look for Father Roderick. Father Roderick on Facebook and Twitter. You'll find me.
Thanks.
See ya. Yeah, I always forget to take my cards with me. Because sometimes people do interviews, or you film them, or you take a picture, and then they always kind of want to look back at, you know, where does this end up. This is kind of where they sell the games. Once you've tried them out, you can buy them here. And I don't know many of these games, but I heard that Charterstone is fun. And yesterday, Sebastian told me that one of his favorite games is actually based on Battlestar Galactica, the reboot by Ronald D. Moore. Here's a Game of Thrones Catan version. Of course, you can always get those commercial tie-ins. And then, since this is the same kind of nerdy target audience, they have this in the middle of the tent. They've got all these Funko Pops, which I guess that once you start collecting this stuff, it just never ends, because there are thousands and thousands, and they create their own artificial scarcity, and so some of these plastic things that won't cost much to make are worth hundreds, if not thousands, of euros and dollars. Magic the Gathering, there's so much... I wish I had more time to play these games. I like to play them every once in a while. But they were two guys dressed up as monks. And one is carrying the Santiago...
God.
Yeah, I know.
Compostela.
Did you walk there, or are you still planning on?
Actually, we wish, but we want to make a vacation out of it.
Yeah, well, you can.
Yeah.
You have to do a lot of work. A lot of walking.
But the beer tasting on the way.
The beer tasting.
in the Abbey streets and in the Monkey streets. I think that's...
I like your motivation. Very good. Did you create your own costumes, or do you buy them somewhere?
No, we bought the costumes in the street. Yes. Made some stuff.
Actually, this
They're
is the
monk,
most
monk
thing.
Robes.
This is actually the most accurate thing. There is on the costume.
Yes.
Because they were not allowed to carry swords.
Oh, okay. So
accordingly to the Bible.
This is the icon.
What is it called?
It's the Morning Star.
And the Morning Star. Yeah, that's a nice. But you can also hit someone, whack someone on the head with it.
It's a weapon based on the Star of Bethlehem.
Very good.
Multifunctional
monks. Have a great time, guys. See ya. There's a lot of religious imagery if you look for it. And I always, since I walk around as a priest, for me it's not strange to ask and to start a conversation about it and ask them about their motivations. So I've got a lot of cool conversations. And that's also true the other way around. If people ask me, are you for real? Are you a real priest or are you just dressed in costume? I love this too. This is all woodwork. Canes with like the heads are like dragons or a bird. This one's really cool. It's like a, like almost like a Game of Thrones dragon. And actually quite affordable. Like a cane like this, 54 euros. That's kind of the... the usability of it is limited. I mean, when are you going to walk around with a cane that ends in a dragon's head? This is the second tent, much darker, much bigger. And this is the tent for fantasy riders. This is where writers that write in the fantasy genre can sell their books, but also meet their readers. Now, I always feel that this is kind of the niche of a niche. The people that come here to a festival like this, that's already, of course, a subculture and a niche of our Dutch society. But then the writers that aim to reach, let's say, Dutch fantasy fans with their books, that's an even smaller percentage that actually buys these books and reads them. So, but then again, on the other hand, what I love about this, and so they're kind of lined up in small stands on the sides of the tent. On the inside is blue, on the outside it's beige. They're showing their books, they're having conversations. But what I like about it is that these are all self-published books. Most, well, I guess 90% of them. So they just wrote a book. Perhaps they printed 100 copies, but it's a real book. And the only way for them to sell them, because they don't have that. Link to the, let's say, the whole marketing chain of the regular old-fashioned publishers. Well, this is the way they interact and connect with their audience. And this, of course, is a prime target audience here. If there is one place and one time in the Netherlands that you can reach potential new readers, then it's here on this fantasy festival. So I love that entrepreneurship of those writers. This is a comic books. This is not self-published, of course. This is more commercial stuff. And I was surprised yesterday, and I still am, that all these comic books have been translated in Dutch. Because comics are... They used to be big in the Netherlands, but they also are always a bit expensive. And nowadays in the cities, all these comic book stores have disappeared because they just don't make enough money to pay the rent. And so a lot of the sales of comic books have moved online. But here you have like a regular comic book store. And I just, because it's all online, you never really know how many people are still reading and buying these. But here, for instance, is a large Star Wars section. And this is all translated in Dutch. I had no idea. Mace Windu, C-3PO, Poe Dameron even. What's this? This is Revenge of the Sith. So it's the comic book version of the movie. Darth Vader. These are pretty recent. And then, of course, you've got Legends, which is like a reprint of some of the older stories that are now no longer canon. This is the comic book version of The Last Jedi. Let me take a look. I did not know that that was already... Oh, no. This is just... like because the comic is still being published. This is a film book with... behind-the-scenes photos, and it's really, really pretty. Speaking of Star Wars, since this is, after all, my weekly show, the news that of the casting... Did you hear that? They've announced the cast, so they've confirmed a number of things that were rumored to happen. Now we've got official confirmation by Lucasfilm that Lando Calrissian will return. And not only will Billy Dee Williams return for the last episode, this is going to be the last episode in the Skywalker saga. That's also confirmed. Not only Billy Dee Williams is back, but Mark Hamill is back as Luke Skywalker. And even more surprising and even shocking, Leia is going to be back. And they're going to use... footage that J.J. Abrams shot with Carrie Fisher for episode 7, strangely enough, not for episode 8, and they've been able to write some of the lines that were meant for episode 7 to rewrite the script in such a way that they can use it for episode 9. And it is, I think, an amazing creative way to honor Carrie Fisher's importance to the entire Skywalker legacy, though, and the entire series of 9 movies. Well, she wasn't, of course, in the prequels, but still, well, as a baby in the third prequel. But I love when I heard it. It's like only J.J. Abrams can do this and make that work. And I cannot, I've been kind of racking my brain, how are they going to do that? Are they, because, of course, all those lines were recorded when she was in costume, and so that's going to be the costume of episode 7, not what we saw her wearing and the hairdo, etc., of episode 8, The Last Jedi. So I was like, are they going to... And then, of course, you've got the backgrounds. Now, those could be digitally be replaced. But I was like, everybody's going to know that this is reworked footage. So my first theory was they're going to do flashbacks. They're going to somehow tell the tale of... And especially because they're bringing back Mark Hamill as well, they could do a flashback where we see, perhaps, Mark talking with Leia. Although... That doesn't make sense because Luke Skywalker is gone. Nobody knows where he is. So it doesn't make sense that they're together in a scene where she's wearing the stuff that we saw her wearing in The Force Awakens. So I'm like, not sure. Then the second possibility is that both of them will return as Force ghosts. And that we will see some like Obi-Wan Kenobi appeared and gave advice to Luke Skywalker. And that actually, I think, would be a very Star Wars thing to do and very respectful. And also you can get away with her looking the same as the way we saw her in the movies, because that's exactly what they did with Ben Kenobi as well. He appeared in the same vestments, the same clothes that we saw him wearing while he was still on Tatooine. So I kind of get the feeling that that's how they're going to do this, and it will be a nice send-off. You know, these appearances of the Force ghosts don't last very long. There's usually not that much exposition, so this could be, I don't know, they appear to Rey. That seems to be kind of the most obvious thing to do. But what if the both of them appear to Kylo Ren in like a last-ditch post-mortem attempt to bring Kylo back from the dark side? Who knows? I don't know. Or the both of them. There are so many ways in which you can do. Or perhaps it's just going to be this last moment of the movie, akin to what they did in Return of the Jedi, where we will see like just a whole group just standing there and waving. That would be a bit of a disappointment. We still may see this, but I think that there's going to be another appearance of Luke and Leia. And let's not forget, there is also a story reason to bring back Luke Skywalker, because nobody has seen him die. Even Rey does not know that Luke is dead. She's seen him appear there, perhaps, and she may have heard the stories that he was like standing there and facing Kylo Ren and all those walkers, etc. But she hasn't been able to say farewell to Luke Skywalker, so something tells me that it just makes sense that there's going to be another interaction. And then she's also met Leia at the end of The Force Awakens. There's this embrace where you can tell that there is a bond between those two. So it totally makes sense that there is at least closure for Rey in letting these two characters reappear. And Billy Dee Williams, that is super interesting. To bring him back, and then of course he's got to bring back something of that relates to the story. So perhaps it's going to be about this mysterious lightsaber, something that was never explained. How did Luke's lightsaber, his blue lightsaber that he lost on Bespin in Cloud City during his encounter with Vader, how did that end up with Maz Kanata? And Maz Kanata is also going to be back. So I think that probably Billy Dee Williams plays a role in that story as well, and perhaps, I don't know, he wants to get an update on what happened to that lightsaber, or he wants to get paid for it. I don't know. There are many ways in which they can bring him back, and he can also, I think, bring closure to the Skywalker saga. He's a very popular hero in the entire story, and it makes sense to bring him back. So my expectations for episode 9 are now really sky high. J.J. Abrams is back. He's able to also use a lot of the elements of the stories that he developed for the entire trilogy, because that's what they did. He actually wrote a draft of all the three movies, and then he handed it over to Rian Johnson. Rian Johnson wrote his own take on what that story was, and perhaps he threw away a lot of the stuff of J.J. Abrams. However, I do believe that there are some things that Johnson gets criticized for that are inevitable. If you just look at the logical progression of the various characters. So it may very well be that this still fits with J.J. Abrams' original plan. I can't wait to see. And then the news that they're bringing back all these actors is going to make a lot of Star Wars fans super happy. Just a little... A little sidestep here in this episode. And in the meantime, I'm walking on a field that looks completely yellow. That's really a shame that we have this hot weather. Everything is dry. Normally, this would be a green meadow. Here's another stage where they're gonna play. There's a band actually already getting ready. They're playing music over the speakers for the sound test. And some guys with electrical guitars, and oops, the wind is picking up. And a gun, it says gunfire. It's kind of like a perhaps this cover band of Guns N' Roses, because they have a similar logo. I don't know. Here you can buy the merch for Castle Fest itself, and then there's the entrance to the camping. So some people are staying here for 4 days, and behind the fencing that they put up there with the white sheets to kind of shield it from the from view, there is an entire camping where people will stay, and not just the people, but also all these merchants that are here and the artists. They sometimes perform 3 days for 3 days, so they stay at the camping there too. Of course, that's something I can never do because I have to be at the parish, but I can totally understand. In another life, in another reality, I would probably do that too. Because this is just a great place to hang out. And these days actually last until midnight. That's another difference with a lot of the festivals, where usually they kind of close shop at 8 o'clock and everybody goes home. But here you can just stay as long as you want. And there are concerts with a lot of the music here is Celtic. So you've got, or semi-Celtic, you know, it's bagpipes and violins and harps, but then they also have the drums and everything, so it's usually kind of a blend of different genres, but it's kind of generic festival music. All these festivals that I go to have this same type of music, and it's really cool just to sit and hang out and listen to the music. While you have the wonderful festival food. That's another topic that we need. I can't play any jingles here, but imagine a food and drinks jingle, because that's another, for me, highlight always of these festivals. And one of the reasons that I always love to go here is the type of food that they serve. Now, these food stands are from various places. They go, usually these are for professionals that make a living just going to festivals and selling this food. And so you'll find a lot of the same food on every festival. And so you've got some favorites. And I'll show you around a little bit. So here is an area where people sit and eat. This is a pizza bread. And also you can actually have pizza with meat, fish, or vegan. And you can also buy choco rolls. All this is paid for in currency. Oh, that's a nice Back to the Future t-shirt that guy was wearing. I want one too. The currency here is plastic coins that you purchase at various points. This is, of course, to lower the the security risks of money going around and that kind of stuff. So you buy these plastic coins. Every coin is worth 2.5 euros. And so when you want to, for instance, if you want to get a vegan mango lassi, what the heck is that? Delicious vegan drink with soy, yogurt, and mango. You pay 2 coins. And it works a bit in the same way as a lot of the in-game currency that you sometimes have, you know, on your mobile games, where for 5 blue crystals you can buy this speed-up functionality in your game so you don't have to wait. The thing is, because you've already paid with real money for these plastic coins, afterwards you tend to forget the value of those coins, and you just compare the prices in the economy here on the festival terrain, and the prices are actually quite high if you convert it back, but you just forget about that. So for instance, here you've got fried wedges, which is just potato wedges with a bit of herbs. They're 1.5 coins, so that is actually 3.75. That is quite a bit more expensive than what you would pay for fries, which is basically the same. You pay 2 coins for chicken wings, and that's $5, and it's just like a few ones. A hamburger is 2.5, so that is 5 and 6. That's 6.75 or something like that. That's pretty expensive for a hamburger, simple hamburger. But of course, you also understand that they not only do they sell the food, but they also have to pay for the rent, and they have their equipment, the tent, the personnel. So of course it is more costly probably to sell food here than if you would have your own regular establishment in a town or something like that, where you can make, these guys have to make all their money during these weekends, because during the week, of course, there's not a festival all the time. Let's see, what other trends do we have? There's a long line waiting here for the vitamin bar, where you can get smoothies. Now, on a hot day like this, of course, that's a good idea. 2.5 coins for half a liter. They're actually, I sense the smell of the oranges that they're currently, squishing or pressing. So you can get a strawberry kiwi, plus orange, plus banana smoothie, orange juice, or fruit salad. And I'm like 5 meters away from the stand, and the smell of the oranges is making my mouth water. And I got a pretty dry throat right now because of the talking and because of the hot temperature. There's another big line. This is another food stand that I've never seen. You can buy English pie. Either steak Guinness or beef, mince and cheese. That's a pizza pie. It's a pizza pie. It's amore. Pulled pork. The pulled meat stuff is really like a trend. But they do everything. It's not just pulled beef. Pulled pork. It's pulled pork. It's pulled beef. Pulled chicken. Even pulled vegetables. That's a ridiculous. But anyway, it sells. It's trendy. Breakfast pie, spinach roquefort, vegetarian mushroom pie, fish pie. The big pie is 3 coins, and a small pie is 2 coins, which is actually quite good. That's a good price for a pie. And small pie, that'll probably fill you up for a meal, for lunch, or for dinner. Now here are some costumed people waiting in line for the Cajun Grill. This is also very popular. It's kind of the more traditional festival food with pig steak and bratwurst, aubergine salad. That's, what's the word? That escapes me. It's a vegetable thing. Or baked potatoes. There's actually a lot more. There are many more vegan options nowadays than there were 5 years ago. Yesterday we were talking with a student who was also just completely vegan and proud of it. And he knew exactly where you could get the good vegan food. This is a small, the steampunk section. And also, when I look around the costumes, steampunk seems to be much less than on other festivals where I've been. So here's a little steampunk camp where they have a table dressed in the center. There's some tents, some people just sitting there in their homemade steampunk costumes. Always have goggles. There's a pink flamingo at the entrance to another steampunk tent, and they put some of the machinery on display that they've created themselves. So if I'm not mistaken, the whole steampunk idea is, what if in an alternate timeline, the golden age of the steam machines and the steam boats and the steam trains would have never ended? What would society look like? What kind of technology would we have? So it's all looks very retro, and at the same time there is something futuristic to it. And it's a whole subgenre of the fantasy festivals. But I think it's also because of the weather, most of what you will see here is kind of like this undefined medieval attire. It's, you know, leather boots, usually lightly colored shirts. You see a lot of kilts as well, a lot of kind of semi-Scottish stuff. And there is this is a bit of a new trend, quite a bit of Oriental stuff. That looks a bit like the Aladdin's cave type of, or Aladdin, even the Jafar just there. I was over there, was waiting for his vegan barbecue bread, and he's dressed up like Jafar in Disney. Like, wow, that looks very, very hot. And there is also, Disney is also an always present subgenre here on these festivals. You see a lot of Disney princesses. Like yesterday, that was like a funny thing. I wish I could have taken a picture of that or filmed it. But remember the group with the skeletons that was passing by? It was very dark, and they were playing this dark music, and they're like looking at the, they're engaging the audience that's watching with very creepy gestures, and they're and there was this this Disney princess, this girl who was like dressed up as Belle in The Beauty and the Beast. So she had created her own beautifully bright yellow dress and looking all cheerful, and she was standing on the side of the road, and these skeletons approach her and do the blah. And you saw her, she was like standing there transfixed, didn't dare to move, and is like, this is not supposed to happen. I'm a Disney princess. You are not part of my world. That was hilarious. Another trend that seems to be still here is the pirates. You see always some Johnny Depp lookalikes, Pirates of the Caribbean. Although much less than there used to be. Portable didgeridoo. Never seen that one. I thought those had to be super big. Game of Thrones, also much less than other festivals. This guy's dressed as Jon Snow, even with the hair. I guess, of course, when it's almost 100 degrees Fahrenheit, Game of Thrones, you know, winter is coming, is not the first thing that comes to mind when you're preparing for a festival like this. And it looks so hot. So that may also explain why you see a lot less of the Game of Thrones. But you used to have a lot of these, what's her name again? Kashila, or the blonde-haired princess? There were always like 10 or 20 of those walking around. I haven't seen a single one so far. There is also a small Doctor Who community. So yesterday I saw a Tom Baker lookalike, and today I saw the Ninth Doctor. But I haven't seen the TARDIS. There's always a TARDIS standing somewhere, but not today. Not on this festival. This is kind of the photo op location. So here's the path that leads to the castle. And it's on both sides. It's flanked with flower fields and art, statues. This is a place where a lot of the cosplayers will just walk around waiting for photographers to take their pictures. A lot of these photographers are just, that's a job, you know. They will walk around here with all their professional gear. They're not really enjoying kind of the festive atmosphere, but they're only looking for the cool pictures, and so they sell basically these portraits to the to costume people. Oh, this is fun. This is actually here on my right, storytelling time. There is a whole group of people on benches, and they're listening to a professional storyteller. This storyteller looks like a pirate. He's got a brown coat, a brown pirate hat, and now he's carrying a sword. The mythical sword. We have uncovered the mythical sword. And we have a map of the seven seas of the world. Are we going to pillage? Arr, says the audience. I love this. This is interactive storytelling. It's one of the things that if I would be able to do something on a festival like this, that's what I would like to do. Tell stories. This is Bastian, the Swiss, the Switzer. He's a really cool storyteller. Very, very funny. And his stories are super engaging. So what he does is he lets the audience play a role in the story. So they've all been upgraded to pirates, basically. And yesterday, there's another storyteller, someone I'd never seen on a festival like this. And he was an improvisational artist. So he invited people, and he was also standing there underneath a tree, and he was inviting people to sit down. He says, I am going to improvise a story. So I can't tell you what it's going to be about, but you are going to be able to influence a story. And I thought it was genius what he did. He had this this box, this big wooden box, and before he started, he's like, does anyone have special objects that they want to have... they want to hand me over so that they play a role in the story. Of course, he didn't know what kind of objects people would throw into the box. And what he did is he started to tell a story about a princess who was bored of being a princess and always having to wear these Disney-like dresses and everything. And then every once in a while, he would take one of those objects and that would twist the story around. It wasn't the best story. There were a few moments where I was like, dude, why don't you... this object just begs for this twist in the story. If I would tell that story, it would be so much better. But, you know, who am I to say that? After all, creativity is a unique thing for people. And if, you know, I can't look into his mind, so perhaps he didn't think of those things. But It was a very big motivator for me to do something similar. I want to try this out, you know, tell stories with objects and then just improvise and try to do something. Create stories. I just love to do that. As a child, I always wanted to become... One of my many career options that I had in mind was to become a children's book writer. I loved children's books myself. I was a huge fan of Roald Dahl. And I dreamt of a time where I'd be able to write stories like that. And of course, never was able to make that a reality. But one can always dream. This is cool. At the entrance of the castle is a costumed dark figure who looks like one of the wraiths from The Lord of the Rings, including a massive, huge sword, and he's got like these gloves of silver. Yeah, it looks absolutely fantastic. And he's kind of guarding the entrance. Before him, there was actually a guy who I spoke to who was a devil, and he was like, this. His face was with red scales. Oops, there's a... the time of the wasps has come, so every once in a while there's wasps swarming around me, which is not one of my favorite things. But he actually ordered that costume in the United States, and it's a silicone, so it fits your face really well. We have to glue it on. It looked so hot. And it's like, your entire face is covered. It doesn't breathe. It must be horrendous. But that's kind of the... That's, these guys just enjoy doing that. This is a bit of cosplaying. There's a group of princesses. They're all trying to stay cool. And there are three purple princesses and some bigger ones with the white and black clothing. Here is a furry costumed guy or girl. Don't know what's underneath. Here's a real dog, and it says free hugs on his butt. It also says, use the other side. Oh, that dog. It's a sheepdog. So it looks... But the his fur is done in dreadlocks. So he looks so hot. Poor dog. But he gets a lot of attention. He's cuddled all the time. Alrighty, let's turn to the left. Here's another big area that leads to the main stage. It's the biggest stage. And this is also the biggest food area. I see Peter Pan waiting in line here. Or Robin Hood. Probably Robin Hood. I don't want to offend anyone here. There's some kind of low-cost wizards. Some guys that look like gamers. And so they just took a tablecloth and put that on and made themselves a staff. All right, what kind of food do we have here? On the right is drinks, but that's just the Fanta. And when I drink something here, I want to try the stuff that I never have at home. So it's the Scottish beers or the ales, or sometimes they have these German... Yesterday, it was this green German... I forgot the name, drink, and it was so cold, and it was sparkly and fresh and super sweet, but also kind of tangy. It was really good. This is a vegan stand. Falafel and curries. Not my favorite. It's okay, but it's hot and it's a lot of food. It's almost kind of like dinner. This is, again, pizza. The pizza department. This is... what is this? Hanf bakery? Oh, this is hemp bread. I had this yesterday. Really good. With marinated turkey and sauces and some veggies. And it was awesome. Expensive, but awesome. And it really fills you up. Now, I temporarily, for those of you that follow me, know, you know that I was well underway with my ketogenic diet, which is mainly, so it is no bread, no carbs, only vegetables and fats, meat or vegetable fats. I had to kind of break that diet because for the next 3 weeks, it's going to be really, really hard to stay in ketosis because I'm going to be at the camp. I have no control over the kitchen of the camp, but I know from experience that it's mostly pasta and bread-based. So, probably won't be able to get my calorie totals if I stay in and on my ketogenic diet. And the same is true for vacation. You know, I'm going to be with my three friends, and I'm not always the one who's cooking. So I kind of switch back to carb-based, kind of my regular diet, what I normally eat. And I immediately sense the difference. It's been hard. I'm much more tired. I feel much, much more bloated after I've eaten. And I'm hungry in the morning, I'm hungry at lunch, and I'm hungry in the evening, which never happened to me while I was still, you know, doing the ketogenic diet. So, well, anyway, it does allow me to sample all the food here on the festival. So I'm not complaining right now, and I can always switch back. I've lost a lot of weight, and I'm running a lot also. So I'm not worried that it will hurt my health in the long run. This is a German stand for drinks that I really enjoyed yesterday. So they've got a lot of the beers, German beers, and they've got the pirate beer, just kind of this red sweet beer, and that green concoction, which is awesome. It's also probably because I was really hot and thirsty, and then that was just the temperature is very low of the drinks. Historic ales, cider, Scotland. There's a fruit stand. It's also very popular. Long lines. That is a German bratwurst. You know, it's all kind of meat based. And it's around lunchtime right now. It's actually past lunchtime, 3 o'clock in the afternoon. So it's very, very busy. This is also grilled meat, honey meat, probably marinated in honey sauce, and pork, and just our usual grill stuff that they call barbecue here, which is, of course, not real barbecue, but we call grill barbecue, and we don't have a word for grill. Here is a coffee stand. It's still surprisingly popular despite the temperature. And now I'm approaching the... Oh, on the other side, here is the main stage, and we're going to have Irfan. I guess they're about to start, or they've just finished. I don't know. Oh, that's the first Game of Thrones princess that I see there. Interesting music. Sounds a bit oriental. Let's take a listen here. That's also, just like the food, music is also, for me, discovery time. It's music that I would never check out on Spotify or Google Play Music. Jafar, he was standing behind me. I look around and bump into Disney's Jafar. Well, this music must suit him. It's really nice. And over here on the other side of the meadow are some more of these very popular food stands. Garlic bread, that's the most popular one. It's basically fresh baked bread, like a circle, half circle. And then you cover it, they cover it with garlic sauce, and then you can use your own, pick your own garnishes. So the tomatoes and olives, and it's all vegan. And I think people just love to be able to pile up that circle of bread and garlic sauce with whatever they choose. So it's for the creative people. There's a long, long line. Equally long line here for the burgers. They're quite expensive. And then here is a barbecue tent, Reed Americans Grill. They've got really good stuff, but also very, very expensive. The smell is good, though. There's this circular, like three-story high barbecue or grill, and they're grilling pieces of pork and fat, pieces of chicken. They've got, what is that? It looks like regular beef, satay. And I don't see any... You'd expect ribs, but I don't see them. Perhaps they're sold out. Those are usually very, very popular. And that's kind of all the food there is right here. And with that, I think, for me, it is time to eat something. And it's more importantly, to drink something. I've been talking for about an hour now, and I've been walking in the sunshine. So I'm going to seek some shelter underneath one of those tents in the middle of the meadow, listen to this music, and enjoy my time here. So thanks for listening. I'll be still on vacation for a few more weeks. There may be updates, but not that many. I've pre-recorded another episode of The Walk, so check that out on Tridio.com. And there will be regular updates. We're working on doing regular Insta, Facebook, Twitter updates on our Tridio Media account, and also on the Dutch Tridio account. We've created Tridio NL, which is the Dutch account. So if you're Dutch, follow us there on YouTube, on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and the same also for Tridio Media. Soon you'll see daily updates during weekdays. So, and there may be the occasional update from Father Roderick there as well, with some photos of my adventures in Germany with the Archdiocesan camp, or Spanish adventures near Valencia, because that's where I'm going. I'll talk to you guys later. Thanks for joining me today. Have a great week, and God bless.